Welcome to the Expat Cast. This is the podcast where expats share their stories about fitting in, standing out, and every mishap on the journey to finding home abroad. And this is a special series of the Expat Cast called Terre Talks. I couldn't do it any better today. Sorry. I'm Nicole, and I can't pronounce my R's in any language. I'm originally from the U.S., immigrated to Germany, and now I'm living in Paraguay temporarily. I got bummed that no one knows anything about this amazing country, so I'm here to fix it.
And I'm Zoe. I'm also originally from the U.S. I'm Nicole's childhood best friend. I lived abroad for a few years, but eventually settled back in Philadelphia in the U.S., and I've spent about a month in Paraguay over two visits, so by most people's standards, that makes me an expert.
And Terre Ray. I can't with it today. I don't know why. Terre Ray. It's a drink. It's Paraguayan drink. I'm actually drinking it right now. And if you want to learn more about what it is, listen to this season announcement episode back in August. And today we're going to focus on one aspect of life in Paraguay, the best aspect, which is the people.
Absolutely best aspect.
I've been enjoying starting these episodes with a surprise question for you. So,
oh gosh.
Do you know how people knock on a door in Paraguay?
They don't.
What do they do?
Shout? Text you? If we're getting like delivery or something, like some food, you would just have to be on the lookout because they will just stand out there and never knock.
They definitely don't knock. They don't ring a bell. That part is 100% correct. They text you if it's a delivery driver. That's true. If you've ordered food and they deliver it, they'll text you, I'm here. But it happened actually when you were there a lot because we were showing the house to people because we were moving. The real estate agents didn't always have my number. They had my partner's number. So they texted him. So they would just wait and wait and wait. But they probably did the Paraguayan knock and it's not ringing a bell for you. So should I tell you what it is?
I would love to hear.
It's clapping.
Amazing.
It's kind of tricky because like, so where I'm recording right now is my office and it's the back of the house and they clap on the street. And so it's really tricky now if someone's here, it's complete luck if I hear them. But yeah, it's true. They don't really like ringing bells or knocking on the door. They just clap. And it does work. Like when you're listening for it, you usually can hear it. And it's not like applause. It's like a kind of metered like,
clap, clap, clap. Like how you would knock on a door.
Yeah, exactly. But I thought it was really interesting that they have their own system, although most houses do have a doorbell.
Is there a reason for this that you know about? Because I do have a theory.
I have a theory too. A theory that is partially based on something that I was told by a Paraguayan. So let's say that someone's coming, like an electrician is coming.
Okay.
And they clap when they're there. And they probably also WhatsApp my partner who is at school and teaching a class and can't tell me. So I eventually catch wind of it and I go to let them in and I open the door and I say, adelante, which means like, come on in. They'll kind of hesitate and then be like, a little nod, like not a bow, but like a little nod, partial bow and say, permiso, permiso. I had to ask my Spanish teacher. I was like, am I doing some indirect communication wrong? And they seem to not feel very welcome in my house. Like I'll say, adelante, adelante, at least twice. And they're still like hesitating or we'll get through the garden gate. But then when we get to the front door, there's again like a pause and I have to again say adelante. And I'm like, am I coming across as unwelcoming? And I learned in that moment that actually it's a sign of respect. For Paraguayans, the home is a very, very sacred thing. It's very important. And it's an honor to be coming into someone's house. And, you know, they wouldn't just walk on in. It's like every part of the way they are showing respect, saying permiso. And you can show respect back and say permiso, adelante. And there's like a bunch of other stuff. So that part of being very respectful about homes and space is true. And I've definitely also seen it. Like sometimes people have to fix something in the bedroom. And that's like a whole nother level of like, are you sure I can go in there? And it's like,
right.
Yes, I want you to fix my air conditioner. So that part is true. My theory is that maybe it has something to do with that. And they don't want to like disturb the sanctity of your home with like a doorbell noise or, you know, a knock is too aggressive. So that's my theory. What's your theory?
So my theory is it has to do with guard dogs.
Oh.
Doorbell or a knocking might set some dogs off barking and barking. Somebody's like done a doorbell and it like becomes like kind of a hectic situation versus clapping like might not set off guard dogs.
Yeah. Okay. That's also a good guess. I really have no idea. I should ask.
You should ask because I'm really curious. I've just totally made that up off the top of my head just now. So
I think it's a great theory. Yeah, it would be possible. Yeah, as we go into this episode, I mean, mostly we just want to swap stories because I was able to talk to a couple people before I moved who had met Paraguayans or had even like one or two people who had been to Paraguay. And the one thing that they said, sopa paraguaya, which is cornbread, and that the people are really nice. And I was like, okay, like, what does that mean, though? Like, there's like a million different ways to be nice. Now that I've been here a year, I'm like, no, like, that's the first thing I would tell people. Or maybe up there with food, I would say the food's great and people are great. I think that's usually my response. I think the best way to get the point across of what that means specifically is just to share experiences.
Hopefully you're getting an idea all throughout this series of how nice these people are, but I thought it was important enough to dedicate a whole episode.
The first thing I wanted to mention is just how welcoming they are to foreigners. We won't go into that too deep because we've talked about it in other episodes, but truly most people that you run into in the street, they're familiar with people who are not from Paraguay. You're not necessarily going to be the first foreigner that they've ever encountered in their life. They can name 5 countries that are common countries for migration with Paraguay. I can only speak to Asuncion in this aspect, but it's definitely in the air in Asuncion. Even though I feel like as a foreigner in a capital city, I feel like there's way less foreign activity than I would have expected. And like you very correctly said, Zoe, in a previous episode, like it's just not a huge deal.
Yeah.
To hear someone speaking Spanish with an accent.
And I think it does also speak to this way of thinking that we have discussed previously, which is this pride that Paraguayans have in being a melting pot, even without necessarily having a ton of immigration. There is this idea of like, we're all Paraguayan, like there's no difference between us. We integrate people into our society. And I think that there is a lot of pride in that. Yeah, and I'm also curious like how that translates to places like Argentina or Chile, which also have more light skin tones. Like I found when traveling in those places as a white person, I wasn't necessarily as identifiable as a foreigner or as a traveler as I am when I'm traveling Bolivia or when I was in Asia or places where I was like very clearly a foreigner.
I have one story of Paraguayans abroad. So when I was in Colombia back in January, when we were staying in Medellin, we signed up to do a day trip out to Guatapé through our hotel, and it ended up being like a bus trip with only Spanish speakers. When we're on the highway and they're like, the tour guide is doing his little like song and dance at the front of the bus, telling us what we're going to do and being like, who's here today on the bus? I thought I heard someone say Paraguay, but at the time I'd gotten seated in the back of the bus and my partner was at the front, and I was like, oh, okay, like I guess he just said we're here from Paraguay.
Mm-hmm.
When we got off the bus, he was like, did you hear? Someone's from Paraguay. And we start looking around. Immediately, we see someone holding the whole equipment for tereré. So they had the cup with the straw in it, and there's like a big thermos that you dispense your water out of. We saw this couple holding that and we were like, Paraguayans. We go over and we say hi. We're like, hey, you guys are from Paraguay? We live in Paraguay. And they're like, oh, are you serious? And we just chatted for a second. Like, it didn't go deep. We didn't become best friends, but we just chatted. And as we're chatting, the guy fills up the tereré cup and hands it to us. Mm-hmm. To take a sip, like without saying anything, just, you know, very naturally. And this is very Paraguay, and like part of tereré culture is sharing it. And so there's this whole unspoken culture of tereré, and they knew that we're foreigners, and we also talked about that, and it didn't matter. It was like, Paraguay, here, take a sip. And it was just a really nice moment of being like, so accepted, they're going to share a cup with us. Like we shared a straw with these complete strangers without talking about it, you know, it was just this, it just happens. And I thought that was really beautiful.
Yeah, that's so nice that there was like this sense of community or belonging between you guys because you're living in the same place.
And I will say in that instance, and in pretty much all of the stories you're going to hear, keep in mind that I'm currently in an A2 Spanish class. One thing you'll never notice in any of these stories I'm going to share is someone being like, I can't work with you, I can't talk to you because you don't speak enough Spanish. And I'm not editing those stories out. They just haven't happened. I really appreciate that. Actually, even the other day, I had to take one of our cats to the vet. And I feel like I mentioned going to the vet almost as much as I mentioned trees. So I was there with the one cat, and the other cat has an appointment this week. And the older kitten had been coming every month to get like an anti-parasite medication. And now there's a new kitten and he has to start coming every month. But the older kitten's done with it. So she was telling me all this. And I was like, well, then it's good that we have the second kitten, because if I wasn't coming to you guys once a month, I don't even know what my life would be like. I said this, and like, this was maybe 30 minutes into a meeting where I understood only part of what she was saying. And there were a couple times where I said a lot of things and she was like, I'm so sorry, I don't know what you said at all. But she just told me, and then like we worked through it. And in that moment, you know, I it just made me realize, you know, I feel comfortable coming here alone, even though I know I'm not going to be able to understand everything she says. When she didn't understand me at all, she felt comfortable to tell me that. And she told it to me in a way that I didn't feel demotivated. I didn't feel bad about it at all. I was like, thanks for telling me. Let me try again. Yeah. And I felt confident enough to make this joke. And I don't, maybe this sounds like a small thing, but I'm very sensitive about these things. And I've got a thicker skin over time, but I definitely notice. I always clock how people are interacting with me as a foreigner and in another language. And I still felt comfortable taking the risk to make a joke. And I think she didn't understand every word I was saying, but she understood the gist and she understood that I was making a joke. And she said something back. I have no idea what it was, but I could tell that she was joking back with me.
And then you can just laugh with each other about your own jokes.
Exactly.
Something that I have really noticed is that there's like two ways that it can be kind of frustrating trying to speak Spanish with people when you can't speak Spanish that well. They either are like dismissive or like rude or impatient about it, or they're like overly nice or like trying, like they kind of like make a big deal about the fact that they're struggling to understand you and they're like going out of their way to help you, or they're like trying to speak English and then you lose the opportunity to speak Spanish, or like there's just, you can be making a big deal about it in two different ways. And one of them is obviously better than the other, but but neither of them are necessarily what you want. And instead, how I feel like Paraguayans approach it is that, again, it's just like not a big deal in the same way that like being a foreigner isn't a big deal. They're like, this is a situation that we're in. We're going to get through it. We're going to talk to each other. It doesn't have to be a big hullabaloo that your Spanish isn't great.
Yeah, and I think I can even kind of track my own trust of the people, because I do still have very different instincts from living in Germany for so long. And I just want to say, like, I'm really not trying to do like evaluative comparisons, like, but it just is different. You can look into a lot of like cultural studies about warm cultures, cold cultures, and you know, you got your coconuts, you got your peaches.
I have not heard the coconut peaches comparison.
People from the US, for instance, are peaches. They're very soft on the outside, but a very hard core.
Right.
Germans are coconuts. They're hard on the outside, soft on the inside.
Yeah, so interesting.
You know, it's all just different ways of being. I'm not saying one's better than the other. I might say that I prefer one over the other, but I'm from one culture and right. I grew up knowing things to be a certain way. And I have to say, in Paraguay, it feels way more similar to the US, this peach concept of people are just nice at first.
I just think Paraguayans are more like marshmallows, soft all the way through.
Well, so one thing that makes me think like, well, there's a bit of toughness is some of the cultural social views. Like it's a much more conservative society. So I was asking the other day, like a lot of my friends are queer and some of them would be interested in coming to visit. I wanted to know if that's safe for them. And the person that I was speaking with told me that gay marriage is illegal and the whole outlook towards homosexuality is very closed. It was a strong, like, this is not okay. A lot of people, of course, like gay people exist here, queer people exist here, but you do have to be very careful. It isn't very open in that way. And for instance, especially like it comes back to like if people are visibly different or not, and if they are visibly different, sort of the best case scenario is that someone might stare at them out of interest in the same way that if you see an interesting vehicle driving down the street, if someone is wearing an interesting outfit, that people will look. That's kind of the best case scenario. Worst case scenario is something much darker. So, you know, that's really interesting. Like for people that are so open and accepting and warm, there are still quite strong values that are more closed off. I think I wouldn't have expected. Yeah, and I also learned in the same conversation, I was asking about like, how is it for women here? Like, for instance, like something that surprised me, actually how this whole conversation started is we were talking about apartments and shared apartments. And they were like, well, that wouldn't happen here, though. You don't really have roommates. And I was like, wait, what? And so it's more normal in Paraguayan society that you stay in your family's house until you're married.
Right.
And it's very normal to have like even 30-year-olds living with their parents. Or sometimes you even see multi-generation housing. Yeah, and I thought this was interesting. And I was like, okay, so then like, what about if you're not married to your partner, but you want to live with them? Can you do that? And it's like, depending on the circumstance, you might get judgment for that, but it's probably okay. If you have a kid with them and you're not married, it's quite bad. If you're together forever already and you're like very established, it's a bit better. But you have a kid, so to say, out of wedlock, it feels like an antiquated term to me, but like it can be a huge issue in society. Abortion is not legal. It made me really think about like the part of Paraguayan life I'm not experiencing is family life, because I'm not in a Paraguayan family, and Paraguayan family life is very traditional, and that has all of the implications that you might think with that. And I just found it surprising, because even on the topic of being a woman here, I don't feel that in everyday life. I think I was expecting, like, you hear, you know, machismo culture associated with like all of Latin America, like really patriarchal, lots of like sexualization constantly being assigned to a situation, especially for a woman. And I can't say that I've experienced all that much of it. Actually, when we were in Colombia, I was like, oh, this is what they mean. Because I really hadn't run into it much at all. Like, of course, you have different norms for different genders across different countries. But like the straight up, like, I don't know, like in that bus on the way to the tour, they were just showing like music videos that were borderline softcore porn. Like it was very intensely sexual everywhere you look. And like, yeah, it was really different. And here it's not like that I've experienced. Like, I'm sure you can find it, but everyday right. life, no. I do a lot of things alone as a woman. I mean, I've said in other episodes, I don't go walking at night as much as I used to, mostly because of the dogs in the neighborhoods, but but also, I'll be honest, like also just out of safety. But during the day, I mean, I really don't notice it. I think sometimes I forget so much that things are slightly different here. And like, if I'm wearing a crop top or something where there's maybe a little cleavage or like a skirt or something, sometimes I've noticed men looking or saying something. I realize after the fact, I'm like, oh, okay, maybe I'm presenting in a way that to them signals something sexual. Right. Whereas I'm like, I'm just wearing a skirt. Like, what are you doing? Or I've started biking more like to Spanish class and to some other places. And I think it's kind of uncommon for a woman to be biking. And especially times where I wear more feminine clothing while biking, that I've really started noticing like at least double takes, not always anything more than that, but just like, oh, this is not normal.
I have noticed for men and women in Paraguay, clothes are pretty full coverage. People wear pants. People wear t-shirts that is not showing cleavage, even long sleeve shirts. Like, I feel like people have a lot of coverage, probably because if they're outside, there's a lot of sun, which I think is pretty common in like really hot climates, because it does help you cool in some ways. So like, I definitely noticed, depending on what I was wearing when I was around, I would like look around and be like, oh, I'm showing a lot more skin than everyone else around me.
Yeah. I think coming from a not as warm climate, like we think, oh, it's hot, I should wear less clothing.
Yeah, for sure. I have traveled places where it is seen as like culturally insensitive, rude, or like in some way uncomfortable for everyone if you are showing skin. So like some places I've been in Asia, it's kind of like, don't do it. That is not how I feel about Paraguay. So I just want to make it clear for anyone who is going to visit Paraguay, like, I don't necessarily feel like you need to have a certain dress code in order to not come across as an insensitive traveler.
One place I have maybe noticed more visibly the difference in ways that men and women are treated is in restaurants. I probably would notice it more, except for the fact that my Spanish is bad and my partner's Spanish is pretty good. People will talk to him more, but I'm like, well, that makes sense. They can talk to him. Like, yeah. I don't know what I'm saying. in restaurants, I know I can order something at a restaurant, and I know the Spanish isn't really a huge issue, but they still default to him, and they default to him when it's questions such as, where would you like to be seated? What would you like to order? When they bring the check, they'll bring it to him, and I have to like take it if I'm getting the bill. And I've found when I've asserted myself a little bit there, or if I do take the bill, there might be a slight look of surprise on the person's face, but it doesn't seem like it's an issue. They're just like, oh, okay.
Right. It's just the default.
Because it's the default, it's noticeable. But would I say that I feel super discriminated against? No, not really. Because I feel like, again, when I show how I would like to be addressed and treated, people are very happy to do that for the most part. There are some times, I will say, where I feel like I could try all I want and this man is not going to treat me as an equal.
Yeah. And that happens everywhere.
The other thing that I notice at a restaurant is with wait staff, they can get kind of chatty. Small talk does happen. I would say there and like in a cab, it's often you'll say a couple words to each other. And I've definitely had rides where you just end up talking to that person the whole drive. So it definitely can happen in those environments.
Wait staff is where I have the most questions as far as like, oh, where are you from? Because they're just kind of trying to make small talk.
One thing that makes me not get annoyed about the small talk, because I think I do have a threshold where I'm like, okay, it's enough. they don't really do that. At the grocery store, when you're checking out, they'll say, hey, how are you? But they're not like chatting you up. You don't get caught behind someone who's just chatting to the cashier for 20 minutes, you know?
Right.
I feel like that happens sometimes in the U.S. and it really irks me.
That's me. That's me chatting to the cashier. So are there any other like cultural expectations that surprised you?
I think I definitely was anticipating a different relationship with punctuality than Germany, mostly because Germany is quite famous for being among the most punctual places in the world. Very famous for it. And here I kind of knew it's at least not going to be like that. And I didn't know what it would be. I would say you definitely have way more of a culture of people flaking. Like if you're making plans with someone, they'll say up until the hour before the event, yeah, I'm coming. And then they just either won't come or they'll text 2 hours later and be like, I'm not coming. But then even when you have like appointments for, I keep using the example of the electrician because we've had a lot of things that we've needed to like just tweak in this new house with the air conditioners and some other stuff. So as we were doing that, it was always kind of an ordeal because it's like you get the number of someone, you reach out, they're like, cool, I'll come tomorrow at 3:00. And tomorrow at 3:00, you're waiting. You're like, of course they're going to be late. That's fine. But then all of a sudden you're like, it's 5:00 and you're like, can I leave the house? It's like, is it not happening or are they just late? And then I've definitely had moments where like just when I'm like, okay, I'm just going to carry on with my day, then they show up and you're like, oh, and I've had these delays happen over days, like things that were supposed to happen in the next week because they keep being like, yeah, tomorrow. So that can definitely be kind of annoying. The thing is, every time they come, we just had this really recently with like there was a hole in the wall that someone had left and they needed to fix and they kept putting it off and they kept putting it off. And it's like, it's a hole in the wall. It's not that important to my everyday life, but you're like, come on, I want this like just done off my list.
Right.
So the guy finally comes and my partner was home at the time. So he was dealing with them and we kind of exchanged a look. Like we talked, we're like, we're annoyed at him. Like we want to be nice, but like we also want to be clear. Like, hey, it's not cool. So we're going into it with this kind of more negative mentality. And within 2 minutes, it's like, no, we can't actually, because this guy shows up and he's so nice. He's so nice and he's so friendly and he does his work and he leaves and it's all good. And it's just like, I don't know. I can't leave with a bad taste in my mouth because they're just so stinking friendly. I mentioned in a previous episode, we were ordering a sofa and a kitchen island. And the guy just like ghosted us. Like everything was progressing. And he was like, it's going to be done tomorrow. It was on a Friday. That Saturday, we don't hear from him. Sunday, nothing. Monday, nothing. Tuesday, we reach out. He doesn't respond. And we're like, oh, something up. Like, this is getting fishy. And then somehow we get a hold of them on a different phone number. And within 3 hours, the sofa's in the house. These really nice guys show up. The kitchen island we ordered, like I had measured the doorway and I knew it would fit through the doorway, but barely. But I'd made an error and didn't see this one corner of the doorway that prevented that from happening. So on my error, they couldn't get it through the door at first. And they weren't mad. They were like, no worries. Let's just try a different option. And then they somehow got it through the door. And like, by the time they left, I was like, I'm not mad about anything. I want to order from these people again.
Right. Yeah, it's just the power of friendliness.
I really appreciate it about daily life. And I feel like, especially when there's like a challenging moment, it really comes out to shine. Like, for instance, it was so ironic, but right after, like the week we were releasing the transit episode, I was editing it. I just put the final edits on that episode. My partner and I get in the car to drive to a grocery store, and it had been raining all week. And as we mentioned, especially when there's a lot of rain, there's just giant sinkholes appear out of nowhere. And we see one of these, like there was like a tree branch sticking out of the ground at an intersection. And we know now that that means that's a hole. Someone's marking a hole. You have to drive around it. And most people were driving on the left of the hole, but for whatever reason, he was driving and he went on the right. And apparently there was another hole that had not been marked yet. It was just this crazy noise, like the whole car shook. And he drove enough to get the tire out of the hole and then stopped before getting the back tire into the hole to figure out what's happening. So we get out to investigate it, and there's a guy on a motorcycle. At first I thought he had gotten into like an accident or something and that's why he was standing around, but no, he just had stopped his commute to help people navigate this hole. So he comes over to us. Also, there's one of these guards, like we've mentioned, there's kind of street guards that are pretty common in a lot of neighborhoods, and one of the local guards came over and he was like, oh man, I'd put the sticks in that other hole, but I didn't realize how bad this one had gotten, and I didn't put one there. I'm so sorry. And we're like, you're sorry? Are you kidding me? Like, thank you for putting those sticks in that hole.
Wait, it's
like,
not your job.
No, it's not his job at all. His job is security for one house on that block. And he just was like, well, it's raining and people are driving. Like, let me help out. The motorcycle guy just comes over. He's like, tranquilo, everything's okay. And he tells my partner exactly how to drive. He got us off of the hole. And then we came out and they like made sure we're okay, checked our car. And then they went to go get sticks to put in the hole. And he and I are just standing there like, what is this? Like, I wish I could give them something to say thank you. Like, I don't know. It's stressful driving in the rain at night. And I imagine a lot of people just want to get home, or, you know, this guard just wants to sit in his building shack thing and not be out in the rain. And it didn't matter. They both just like put themselves aside and came out to help not only us, but like all of the cars coming and going. And yeah, it was a scary situation. Like, luckily the car is fine. We're fine. But that hole, like, it was up to my shoulders. And it was out of nowhere. It looked literally like a puddle. And the first thing that we pulled out of it was a wine bottle. And at first we were like, oh my God, a wine bottle sized hole. No, a human sized hole. Anyway, shout out to people for not only being friendly on the street, but also like straight up helping you when you need it.
Yeah, I feel like people are really helpful, like going out of their way to be helpful.
I remember, I think I shared this in one of the first episodes. Charlie was our cat that we brought from Germany, and in our old house had a mango tree in the backyard. Ding, ding, ding. Tree alert.
Ding,
tree
ding,
alert.
Ding, 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 ding. Tree, tree, tree.
So he used to run up and down the mango tree, which we thought like, awesome, it's good for his claws, it's good exercise. But one day he decided to climb all the way up the mango tree and jump onto the roof of our house. And our house was connected to like all of the houses on the block. It was 7 or 7:30 or 8 on a Sunday morning. And we had just, I mean, I had just gotten there like a month ago. So I had just met the next door neighbors. Like, I was super new here. We didn't know what to do. Like, and we were just like out on the street, like looking up, trying to see where Charlie had gone. So my partner has a drone for photography, and he had gone into the house and gotten his drone and was setting it up to fly it could figure out where Charlie is and then what to do. And our next door neighbors just come outside, and they heard something on their roof, and then they saw us on the street, and they just came out and were like, hey, what's going on? Do you need help? Sure enough, not even 5 minutes later, Charlie is back home because they let us come into the house, got a ladder out. The one guy spotted my partner while my partner like climbed onto the roof basically and got the cat. Problem solved. They were happy to help. They didn't need any thanks.
And I feel like you became friends and like friendly with a lot of people in your old neighborhood. Like, I mean, I know when I was there the first time, we had dinner with your landlord and his family.
Yeah, they lived right across the street, and they just were always so friendly, and they had kids, and their kids were in love with Charlie. So, I mean, within weeks of us getting there, they were like offering to like, we were going to go out of town, and they wanted to watch Charlie for us. And it started this really beautiful friendship. So we would have them over for dinner. We would go to their place for like snacks. They watched our cat for us. And we were like, that's so nice. And they had done it with their 10-year-old daughter. And it was kind of like a responsibility practice for her, you know? But we, of course, like we did something or baked something for them. I can't remember what we did. And then that made them feel nice. So then they did something for us. Like they brought over a bunch of planters for the backyard. And their daughter, like, she was like my little buddy. She would just show up after school some days and come pet my cat and talk to me for an hour about her school drama. And it was great. I loved it. She's actually the reason why my cat Tomato is named Tomato, because one of these times in these like gift exchange situations, I think we'd given one of the pots that they'd given us back to her. Yeah, we'd planted some tomato seeds and she was losing her mind because, I don't know, 10-year-old girls are weird sometimes. And she just was like, I love tomatoes. And you're telling me I can just grow them?
I mean, it is wild.
It is. I share her enthusiasm for the process of growing plants. Since she loved cats, when we decided we were getting a second one, we were like, well, we got to run it by her. She has to approve, you know? So we invited her into the process. She met the kitten before we even adopted him. And we were sitting there like brainstorming names together. And because she loves tomatoes so much, we were like, what if we named him Tomato? Kind of joking. And she was like, oh. And somehow the name just stuck. And also because it's a reminder of her, because their family moved. So we definitely miss them all the time because they were like part of our daily life. And yeah, it makes me happy when I look at Tomato sometimes. I just think of her and this like beautiful relationship we had with them.
I got a lot of peer pressure from her to get a cat.
That's true. I'll cut off my anecdotes there, but hopefully all of these little stories that we've shared give you a more specific picture of like what I mean, what other people mean when they say Paraguayans are friendly. All right, so let's wrap it up with our capybara joke of the day. Zoe and I spent hours on a canoe in this runoff river of the Amazon rainforest in northern Bolivia, just coming up with every single pun we could imagine with the word capybara. And Zoe is sitting here now with her head in her hands because she knows we do this every week and she did not prepare.
I never do.
I don't really either, but I had an amazing idea earlier today, so I haven't forgotten it yet.
Go for it.
A Paraguayan capybara is coming over to your house for dinner.
Yes.
How do they tell you they're there?
How?
They clapybara.
What do you call a capybara who's the front man of a band?
Oh, what?
Capy guitar.
What?
I'm so sorry.
That's a great one, but a horrible setup. Why is that the front man? Isn't the singer the front man?
Yeah, usually the singer has a guitar.
No, because sometimes they need to dance. I maintain you could have had a better setup, because that's a good punchline.
Can you tell the joke again?
Yeah. What instrument does a capybara play?
That's so much better.
It's so much better. It's not that complicated.
Because also, as I was telling the joke, I was like, I reached a point in the setup where I was like, this doesn't even make sense. What do you call the front man of a band? It's not guitar.
No. You got halfway there. The punchline was good, and that's all that really matters.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, next week we'll be back with an episode about languages in Paraguay. Till then, have a good week. Hasta luego.
See ya.